The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
That's a question I've been asking myself all week, pondering what happened at the Law Enforcement Appreciation Day 6th Annual Pro-Police Rally on Sunday. How in the world could these people be so cold-blooded as the Colorado-originated band Big Head Todd and the Monster sings? And this awesome tune from their album, Midnight Radio. Hello, my friends. Welcome back to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. News Talk 710 KNUS. Time now for the second hour of the program. And I want to continue to get some more of my own thoughts here on 710 KNUS and my own conversations over what happened last Sunday. And I'm sure you've heard Ron McLaughlin, lead organizer of Pro Police Rally Colorado, on one of our programs somewhere. Maybe you saw this interview I'm going to play from Jimmy at the Crossroads, my web show. But on Monday, when I did a special show all about what happened at the rally and the invasion of a swarm of Antifa, Black Lives Matter extremists, I began my series of interviews with Ron McLaughlin, lead organizer of Pro Police Rally Colorado, and I want to share that interview for you today because I think it is so powerful, particularly because I believe it was his first interview, maybe it was his second, but his first interview that he'd done post-rally that was not for the television cameras at the rally itself. Again, Ron McLaughlin, lead organizer. Let's hear it. Ron, my friend, welcome to the show. It's good to have you.
Oh, Jimmy, thank you so much. Thanks for being there yesterday, and thanks for having me on the show today.
Well, I appreciate it, and we'll get to why you have some coverings on your forehead here in a moment. But I want to ask you what happened yesterday, Ron McLaughlin.
It's chaos. We've been doing this for a long time. This is actually the 12th event that Pro Police Rally Colorado has put up in the last 5 years. And this is the sixth one to be put up in downtown Denver. It wasn't easy. I was able to get the permit, the insurance.
Ron, if you could please speak just a little bit louder. You're coming a little quiet.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. It was unfortunate in many ways. There are a lot of really good people that came out yesterday to have a good time, to celebrate their men and women in law enforcement. And these guys need to have that celebration. They're completely under the gun at all times. But it was overran by a group of people that see things a bit differently. And it could have been handled differently by our police, as far as I'm concerned. The chief and I did speak on Thursday and again on Friday about this event. I was on the phone with another member of the police department leading up to this event, all throughout the day, and what was going on across the street. I had people that were watching to see how things were going to unfold across the street. They were unimpeded. They got riled up, and they were just let go. And the eventually the guys that really wanted to do what they need to do, which are the police guys on the grounds, eventually they were allowed to actually step in. But at that point, they were doing not much more than just showing a presence. And they were allowed to overrun the people that have we have a permit. It's a space that we've been at consistently. It's our sixth one. The chief knew very, very well what was going on. And they never put anybody to block anybody from coming in to see us. That's unfortunate.
Ron McLaughlin, when you were in contact with the police, particularly in the lead up to this rally, what did they tell you? Did they support your effort to do this, at least the chief of police and his top brass? Did they discourage you from holding the rally? Did they suggest other venues?
Okay. Now, bear in mind, for the last 6 weeks, we've really been pushing this on Facebook. At that point, we weren't at quite 60,000 feeds that have gone out. 3,000 likes, another 1,000 shares on just my page alone, not to mention everybody else's page. Thursday afternoon, I get a phone call, and they're asking me if I would change the venue and move it over to Pepsi Center and be out there. Not like inside the Pepsi Center, but out at the Pepsi Center where there would be space to put us up. Why? They were afraid that something like this might happen. There's a group of an organized group that's on the other side of the Veterans Park over by the Capitol that's all about socialism, or not socialism, basically communism. It's ridiculous crap that these guys are into from my perspective. But they were concerned that these guys might come over. And and the chief also said that if we have this event, that we're going to go backwards and not forwards. And I asked the chief, I said, how is it possible for us to go forward if we give in to the bullies? If we don't stand up for what we believe in our own city, how is that going forward by giving in to these children? And that's what these guys are. These are little kids in
They were
black
blowing
pajamas.
bubbles. Children blow
It
bubbles.
was, but they scream, they yell, and they pitch a fit, kind of like that girl on Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory, give me more. It's beyond the pale. And I didn't see how moving the venue would make sense. A mile down the road, as if they're not going to walk a mile down the road to make a statement. That doesn't make sense. My insurance that I have for the event that I carry, it's specific to a location. How could I, once I moved the venue, that it would be done? We wouldn't have been able to have the event. And the idea of coming back next year when everything is all calm and cute and sweet, that doesn't make sense either. In the meantime, in that conversation, however, the police did let me know that for the last four, since basically May 28th, that there's been mischief and mayhem rioting going on in our city every night, anywhere from 30 to 300 people going through different neighborhoods and terrorizing these neighborhoods. So how, in any way, shape, or form, is that what we're, how is that a win? So we give in to these children that are pitching a fit, and yet the citizens that are having their lives disrupted every single night, that's okay, they can put up with it. We're going to appease these children. That says a lot about what's going on with our mayor, how he wants to, and our city council. Everybody is always in a hurry to throw the police officer under the bus, like picking the pepper out of the fly poop on any incident whatsoever. But the reality is, these men and women, they are the messenger. The message is coming from the people's mayors and their city councils. But you never see a mayor, you never see a city council person say, "Hey guys, that's our fault. We thought this might work, but it didn't." That never happens. They just keep throwing these men and women of law enforcement under the bus. And when they do that, they're throwing us under the bus.
So,
It's ridiculous.
Again, we're talking with Ron McLaughlin, who is the lead organizer of Pro Police Rally Colorado, the sixth annual Law Enforcement Appreciation Day event that happened yesterday in Civic Center Park in downtown Denver, just a couple blocks from the Colorado State Capitol. Ron, in terms of the safety situation, I mean, there are those who are, like us, advocates of the police who say you should have changed the venue because police were put at risk. And if you really care about the police, you should change the venue. What do you say to that particular critique?
I don't believe the police were actually put at risk. I believe the police were held back and we were put at risk. I believe that if you really want to talk about the 76 police officers who've been injured since May, that's because their hands were tied by our chief and the mayor. They're not allowing these guys to go in and just finish this and put this to rest. So if you're going at half mast or half speed, that's when you get yourself hurt. And trying to put this on my neck, like, oh, it's your fault. You had this event. Now you're the evil bad guy. Well, okay, fine. Do it. But if we don't stand up, that means we're standing down. And standing down to me is not acceptable. We have a split and division going on in this country right now that is ridiculous. And it's really about communism and capitalism.
Well,
let me
amplify your point for just a moment by saying this. Look, the mere fact that they felt empowered and emboldened to be so brazen. Let's put some footage, please, Nathan Matouche, producer extraordinaire, on the camera there, on the screen here. Because, look, the reality is that that's some vantage point from a distance when the swarm came in, that they felt so empowered that they could get away with this, and they did. They essentially did. I saw reports of one arrest that took place, and it is stunning to me that they could feel so able to be so brazen and so vicious in this kind of an assault. Now, I want to put up a couple of images here because things did get pretty tense. We can see that you have a bandage on your forehead, Ron McLaughlin. And I want to show pic 14. And I saw this from my friend Deborah Flora had posted this, a fellow radio host at 710 KNUS here in Denver. That is your forehead in the beginning after you had been attacked. What happened, Ron?
Well, tried to break up quite a few scuffles, to be quite frank with you. You know, I don't want anybody to be in a fight. I don't want people to get hurt at all. At that point, on that particular situation, I was Lowe, who was the guy that is a lead of our band, was trying to get his bike out through the crowd to get where he needed to go to just get out of there. And I saw people were getting in front of him. So I went down there to try to help clear a path so he can get him and his bike out of there safely. And these guys were standing in front, and it became like a mosh pit. And there was some pushing and some shoving. And next thing I know, some kid hits me. I think it was with a longboard across the face. And then another guy comes up with one of those amplifier things on top of my head. And that's what you call a peaceful protest.
Yeah,
sure.
Ron, where do we go from here? Where do we need to go from here in Denver, Colorado, and around the country? Riots are beginning once again in Seattle. We're seeing chaos start to just, it seems, expand ever more across the country once again. What do we do, especially when the police have effectively been neutered by their political overseers?
Well, first thing I think we got to do is unleash the police. For the safety of the people in those.
When you say unleash, what do you mean? What do you think should have happened differently yesterday?
Well, when I mean unleash, I'm not talking about just yesterday. I'm talking about since the 28th of May. We, like you said, we've allowed people to get emboldened. There's no consequence whatsoever for their actions. And the beginning of growth begins with accountability. So we need to round these people up. Seriously, just round them up and put them, incarcerate them, and then pick out what you need to pick out from that point forward and go through whatever process we have to go through. If you get a speeding ticket, if you rob somebody, if you burn somebody's house down, if you beat somebody up, there's consequences. Well, we got to start using our consequences. If the people that are in office right now are not willing to stand up for the citizens that put them in that office, then those people need to be replaced. There's got to be something somewhere, somehow, legally, that says if you're not protecting the best interests of the people in the city that you govern, then you have to be, there's got to be somebody who takes over for that. They can't have absolute power to decide, oh, let's just go ahead, burn this section down. Y'all have a good time because, oh gosh, life has been so tough for you. What about the people who had their business burnt down or the houses that have been torched or the windows that are broken? Look at our city hall. Look at our state capitol. Let's just tear down some more statues. Let's just go ahead, paint it. Let's break a few more windows because damn it, we got to let these guys get it out of their system. This is beyond the pale, Jimmy. And we have to unleash the police, allow them to arrest these people and put them where they need to be and start going through the process of holding them accountable for their actions as well as the people that are orchestrating this garbage.
So in terms of unleash, I just want to be very clear because you and I are on the same page here, that unleash does not mean let them do whatever the heck they want and get abusive, because we have seen instances of abusive police. There are things that need to change in policing across the country. What you mean is that they have a very tight leash around their necks in terms of not even being able to do their job. I was talking with a friend of mine, a good friend who is a police officer in Georgia, and he was explaining to me just how terrified the police are across the country, that they don't have cover from protection from politicians. Politicians are trying to, as you said, throw them under the bus at every occasion. They're putting significant restrictions on them. And so they're like, what am I supposed to do? And then when they actually do something and take some sort of action, even if it is reasonable under the current existing rules, they are penalized for it.
The politicians don't want to be accountable for anything. All they're trying to do is cater to whatever they believe is a base that will give them more power. In the meantime, if today it's popular to throw the police under the bus, they're going to. But it's more than that. It's about the tearing down of our society. Look at what these organizations are. They're Marxist organizations. This really isn't so much just about the police. It's about tearing down. You split, you divide, and you conquer. So if we can get rid of your feeling good about your police department or feeling safe, then you can control fear. You can't control the faith. If a person believes, and faith means belief, if you have the belief that you can get up and have a better day today than you did yesterday, and all you've got to do is roll up your sleeves and go to work, and you have a path in which you can go to, that's hard to control. But if you're in fear that, oh my gosh, I have to look over my shoulders, now the person who's got you in fear has the control of you. And that's what this is about.
Ron
this
McLaughlin.
Is about control.
Yeah, I think you're right on there. And the mere fact that they were able to do this yesterday in a peaceful demonstration is abhorrent. And the mere fact that they did it shows how dangerous they really are. Ron McLaughlin, we got to run. We've got a great lineup coming up. I really appreciate it. I'm glad that you are safe. You're okay after being assaulted yesterday. I appreciate it, and best wishes to you.
Hey, Jeremy, thank you so much. I just want to say to all the guys, you, Randy, Casper, Basil, Michelle Malkin, Julie, I forget the Sheriff Ream, boy, is he a neat guy. You know, Lowe and the band, all the people that came out and the guys that came to help keep it organized as best we could. I cannot thank you guys enough for being there. Thank you, Jimmy.
And let me just say about the band being, I mean, I hardly even got to play with them. And I couldn't even hear myself play for the little bit that I was playing. I saw the look on one of the band members' face when he was just like, I'm out. I can't be here anymore. It was a look of absolute terror. And that says a lot. Ron, my friend. Great to be with you.
Hey, Jimmy, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Now, I also want to share a snippet from an interview I did with Samantha Cook, K-O-C-H, who is running for House District 1 in Denver. The audio quality for her mic wasn't so great, but I wanted to share a portion of this interview because she talks about the kinds of threats that Samantha herself endured, particularly from one man who was just obsessed with repeatedly threatening to slit her throat.
Well, we were invited, you know, as a candidate running in Denver, we were invited to come and support our police. We were meant to have a few minutes to speak to the crowd and to really show our appreciation for our law enforcement. So I got there a little bit after some of the initial chaos, and I was very confused as to what was happening.
When you say confused, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, we were told to go to this stage area, and I had never been to this particular park, so I didn't know what the stage area was. The reason I didn't know what it was is because the stage area was literally covered shoulder to shoulder with Antifa protesters.
Oh, when you got there, the protesters had already shown up in full force. So the so-called protesters.
Right. That's apparently what we're supposed to call them.
So from a distance then, since you came from the outside, I had not realized that. What was that experience like? What was to walk us through sort of your sense?
Yeah, when I got there, I mean, everything already seemed extremely tense and it was very chaotic already. You know, at that point, the people that were there to support the police were on the sidelines, kind of up on the steps and the benches. And I didn't understand why, but all of the protesters were in the middle, kind of congregating and coming together. The police were coming down from the stairs to kind of separate the people that were there for the rally, separate us from the protesters and trying to keep things, hopefully, from getting out of hand. So that was kind of the environment I walked into.
Samantha, when you were there and you ended up managing to make your way down, I assume, to the main area. And then what happened? What was going on? Because as I understand it, you were directly threatened.
Yes. Well, I was kind of towards the top of the stairs. I saw a couple people that I knew, so I made my way down to them. And then I kind of got into it with a couple of protesters trying to engage them in their cause versus our cause, which, you know, I understand is not generally going to have a lot of point to it. But at that point, I turned around and realized that I was in the midst of all the protesters. So I don't know if all the rally goers had, you know, just decided to leave or if they, you know, were advised to leave by the officers, but I was literally in the thick of the protest. So I was trying to get out of there. So as I, you know, made my way back up the stairs and I was going kind of around the wall, this group was following me and screaming at me. And this one lady, you know, decided that she wanted to really engage with me. She kept slapping my phone and trying to hit it out of my hand. She was getting in my face and yelling obscenities at me. We were kind of in this thick of trees and she kept grabbing the branches and trying to slap them into my face. And this one guy then stepped in and he was a big guy. And he yelled at me to stop touching her. And I said, I'm not touching her. Like, I'm not the one coming at her. And he got in my face and said, I will literally slit your throat. Like, I want to slit your throat right now. I will slit your throat. He said it about 3 or 4 times.
Wow.
And at that point, 2 of our good guys stepped in between myself and these other people to kind of keep things from escalating, which I appreciated. But even from there, this lady continued to come at me and yell at me, and she was really trying to engage, you know, what I felt was a physical encounter, confrontation, and I was not about to get that started.
Unbelievable account. I'm Jimmy Sangenberger. Keep it right here. News Talk 710 KNUS. We're only halfway through the show.
Children of many colors, walking on a big black street, we all bound, giving thanks. We all soul children, the children of rock and roll, the children of confusion. We are reaching high, running fast, burning the sun. We are reaching
Grooving back on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS. Want to play a sample, a portion of my interview with Sheriff Steve Reams of Weld County this past Monday on my web show in partnership with the Washington Examiner. Jimmy at the Crossroads. Subscribe now to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Jimmy at the Crossroads, about the pro police rally Colorado and where we sort of go from here and what went wrong on Sunday. Sheriff Steve Reams, looking as a law enforcement officer, as a sheriff in the county, I mean, if this was in Weld County, you would have had to handle it for a lot of parts of the county. What do you think should have been the rules of engagement? What should have been set up in terms of some sort of a barrier to keep the two events separate as opposed to allowing one to literally invade and amass swarm the other?
Well, it's just that. I think you have to set up zones around the facility. You have to create a perimeter with law enforcement officers, and you have to create ingress and egress points so that you can control the flow of individuals in and out. You know, every law enforcement agency of any size knows how to accomplish these things. I'm sure Denver is well aware of it. They provide policing services to all the major athletic events, so this should have been a walk in the park for them. Again, though, it's a matter of whether or not they're given the authority to engage the way they're supposed to. And I think that's the part that was missing yesterday. When you have a permitted rally that the city and was well aware of, it seems as if the appropriate precautionary measures should have been taken, and they just flat out weren't allowed to. We all know that the Denver Police Department was trying to discourage this rally from taking place for whatever reason. So I think they felt their way to end the rally was just to allow Antifa to do what they wanted to do, and basically caused us to have to end the event.
Sheriff Steve Reams, that's the thing that I have not wanted to think about, but I have, and that is that this was something that they just top brass. Randy Corcoran earlier said this wasn't a blue problem, this was a brass problem. I think he's right on the top brass. The thought that they might have wanted to just let this happen. That's hard to believe, but the thought has absolutely occurred to me given the dynamics here. I understand that they didn't want it to happen, but the rally went on nonetheless, and they didn't put into place any sort of appropriate preventative measures, which can be done and have been done many times in the past.
Well, I think you're correct. This was a brass problem. There's no doubt in my mind by the messaging they were giving to the event organizer that they knew we were potentially going to face a violent encounter. Therefore, they knew they could face a violent encounter. And I think the thought process was, that'll scare off this rally. And when people showed up anyways, you know, there was the last minute text messages and phone calls telling us to beware that Antifa was coming. But that was the most proactive thing that they did. To try to protect the group was just to tell us that they were coming, like we couldn't hear them a block away. But unfortunately, you know, like we've said several times here, the Denver Police Department wasn't allowed to engage in a meaningful way. And unfortunately, some people got into a few fistfights or a few people that got injured. And this is not the way in which this rally should have gone. This should have been to promote the Denver Police Department. I think, honestly, what they did was made more people dislike the way that they're doing business.
Well, I certainly hope that that message gets across, because Sheriff Reams, this is not just a Denver problem. This is a national problem. We're seeing riots break out again in Seattle, Washington, and the unrest is continuing in many cities around the nation where police just feel like their hands are absolutely tied. If they do the things that they're trained to do, they can get in trouble for it. I'm not talking about the excesses. There are things that definitely need to be addressed, I think, in terms of how police operate. But the rules of engagement here, to use the military term, the rules of engagement are just so restrictive that you cannot do your job. And it is not just a Denver problem. It's not just happening here in Colorado. It is happening across the country in all sorts of circumstances. This is just, I think, maybe one of the first instances, maybe not. I haven't heard of others, but where they've actually said, hey, we're going to disrupt a peaceful, law-abiding, permitted gathering, as opposed to let's go burn buildings and riot and that kind of thing.
Well, that's you know, that's absolutely the case here in Colorado. And like I talked about just a little bit ago, Senate Bill 217 in the state of Colorado has legislated many of the things that we saw yesterday when cops can't engage to deal with a riot because a lot of the tools that they would normally use are no longer available to them. That creates a problem. And then the rules of engagement for using force against a rioter or any person, the only way in which a law enforcement officer can use force against someone under current law is if they're going to affect an arrest. Now, again, if a perimeter had been put up yesterday and the permitting process had been adhered to by the Denver Police Department, they could have at least cited folks or arrested folks for trespassing into an event that wasn't open to them. But just didn't.
Final question, Sheriff Steve Reams of Weld County, Colorado, who joined us yesterday at the rally. What do you think needs to be done moving forward now to prevent these kinds of incidents from happening? Because this truly was something that should not have taken place. And also, what do you make of the criticism that has been leveled at the rally organizers for not moving the location of the rally that has been the location for now on six different occasions going back to July 19th, 2015, to the day it was the sixth annual event that has happened at Civic Center Park in downtown Denver? I mean, earlier when we had Ron McLaughlin on, he was explaining about the challenges of getting insurance for another venue and all these other hoops, in addition to the fact that this is the place that we have been for now six different years. And the idea that we're supposed to move this event because thugs are going to be causing this kind of chaos, that doesn't sit well with a lot of people.
Well, you know, to address the first question, I think what you need is a leadership change in the city and county of Denver and honestly in much higher levels of office in the state of Colorado. I hope people watch those videos. I hope people go to their downtown area and understand that these are the results of the votes that they've cast for those people who are making the decisions about this rally and on a bigger picture, what's happening in the downtown Denver area. Elections have consequences. As far as, you know, what could Denver have done to make this safer or prevent this from happening, or what could we have done? They could have denied the permit. I mean, if they really believe they couldn't provide a safe venue, then that's the action that should have been taken. If you can't enter into a contractual agreement to provide a venue and make it safe, then you shouldn't issue the permit. Instead, they tried to put it back on the organizer and say it's his fault for not establishing a safe venue. Well, that's a complete failure on the city and county of Denver, and they should be held accountable for it, quite frankly. There were people that got injured yesterday because of a lack of forethought or a lack of action by the city and county of Denver.
Once again, that was part of my interview with Weld County Sheriff Steve Reams from my web show in partnership with the Washington Examiner, Jimmy at the Crossroads, this past Monday about the pro-police rally Colorado, which he attended as well on Sunday. I want to share one more thing today from my web show, Jimmy at the Crossroads, that broadcasted earlier this week. I had an interview with Josh Siegel, a reporter there at the Examiner, that I just found absolutely fascinating on Joe Biden and unions. You want to listen to this. Once again, that was part of my interview with Weld County Sheriff Steve Reams from my web show in partnership with the Washington Examiner, Jimmy at the Crossroads, this past Monday about the pro-police rally Colorado. I want to share one more thing today from my web show, Jimmy at the Crossroads, that broadcasted earlier this week. I had an interview with Josh Siegel, a reporter there at the Examiner, that I just found absolutely fascinating on Joe Biden and unions. You want to listen to this. And there is a fascinating report that came out last week in the Examiner by Josh Siegel, who joins us now, on Joe Biden and his liberal climate policies actually instilling fear in a lot of unions, a traditional Democratic constituency. Washington Examiner's energy and environment reporter Josh Siegel joins us now here on Jimmy at the Crossroads. Josh, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it as well. This really was a great and extensive report. You interviewed a variety of union officials over a series of weeks in order to get a good sense for how they're feeling, especially about the increasingly radicalized views, many would argue, myself included, of Joe Biden when it comes to climate change issues. Give us sort of the overarching premise of your report, Josh.
Yeah, so I think Joe Biden, he presents a kind of a conflict for some of these blue collar union voters in states like Pennsylvania, where, you know, everyone I interviewed in this story, again, they represent building trades. So guys who do construction on pipelines or at a manufacturing plant, for example, these guys, they're all Democrats, and they all, you know, said to a man that they naturally kind of like Joe Biden before, just based on his history. But they are kind of concerned about his climate policies, which, you know, would try to transition the economy off fossil fuels over time. You know, he doesn't kind of explicitly say no more fossil fuels, but he has goals such as achieving, you know, zero carbon electricity entirely by 2035. That would make it very difficult for fossil fuels to have a place, you know, in 15 years beyond a very small role. So, yeah, I mean, I ended up speaking with six or so union leaders, different unions across Western Pennsylvania and Southeastern Pennsylvania. These are areas that went to President Trump in 2016, kind of based on the promises he made around reviving coal and steel industries that were very important to these areas. And, these guys who I spoke with, I'd say, you know, they're open-minded, Biden, but they're definitely concerned about what he's putting out on climate. And they're saying that they're going to, you know, most of these guys are going to vote first with who they think is going to be better for their jobs of their members. And that's President Trump, even though they definitely have concerns about Trump more broadly and around, you know, these are unions and they more align with Democrats naturally. So that concern is still there. As it stands right now, I'd say they are, majority are likely to go Trump because of what we're seeing with his climate policy.
Those particularly in these industries that are either directly tied to, you know, energy production, so natural gas, oil in particular, and those industries that maybe are connected to this energy producing sector.
Yeah, exactly. You know, these are so, you know, it's important, I think, to differentiate. There are a lot of unions who actually like Biden's climate plans.
Right.
We've seen the United Auto Workers endorse it. We've seen a union of utilities endorse his plan. So these are the unions we're talking about are what they call the building trades. These are guys who like, you know, build pipelines. They get into a natural gas plant and help, install the piping, oil refineries. These are, you know, oil and gas historically been very unionized. They're high paying. The membership in these unions are definitely fossil fuel, you know, prevalent, whereas other unions who might not have that same exposure, which might explain why they're more open-minded to what Biden is saying, because what's interesting is Biden is actually positioning his climate plans as potentially beneficial to unions because he sees an opportunity in building, you know, electric vehicles, building windmills, a new energy economy, as he calls it. And he kind of seems to think that you can transition a lot of these workers to building those kind of things. But what's challenging when you talk to these unions, renewable jobs, you know, wind, solar jobs, these aren't generally as unionized as fossil fuels. The skills aren't exactly, you know, equatable. So there is a concern around transition. There's been these promises before, and there's kind of skepticism on if they'll be fulfilled.
Once again, Josh Siegel is our guest here on Jimmy at the Crossroads, Washington Examiner's energy and environment reporter. One thing I want to read a line. This is early on in your report. Again, the article available at WashingtonExaminer.com is entitled Biden's Liberal Climate Policies Feared by Unions in Pennsylvania. It is a gentleman named Jim Cassidy, and I'd love for you to tell us about him. But Joe Biden is really one of us. I always loved the man. He scares me now. is he embracing the new Green Deal or whatever they are calling it? He needs to get some stuff straight. Now, Mr. Cassidy says he's going to vote for Joe Biden, but his fears are something that seem to be shared by a heck of a lot of union members. And again, unions are a traditionally Democratic constituency.
Yeah, I thought Jim was really appropriate to kind of lead this story with, because he represented the heart of this conflict. This is a guy who represents a union, you know, outside Pittsburgh. He has a photo in his office of him and Joe Biden just from 2 years ago when Biden was visiting the area to campaign for Connor Lamb, the U.S. House member, a Democrat, centrist Democrat from that area. So, but at the same time, as you said, I mean, that quote was very strong. He's concerned about where Biden is going on climate. Although what you hear from some of these guys is there is somewhat of a that maybe Biden, they kind of understand the politics that, he kind of has to, he's getting a lot of pressure from the base of his party, from trying to inspire enthusiasm from young people in the Democratic Party who have made climate change a priority. So he's trying to kind of do a few things here, but without offending these unions. And he's kind of tried to make a distinction from a Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren by saying he's not going to ban fracking, which is, the practice that helped unleash the oil and gas boom in the U.S. over the last decade. I think that this, representative of if he's kind of, he's definitely very concerned, but he again is not told, he says he's going to ultimately vote for Biden. We'll see if he lives up to that. But, giving open-mindedness to where, what his background is and, sure. and what the alternative is, as far as what it means, what Trump means to unions more broadly.
Yeah, Josh, I think that one of the big things that is concerning a lot of these folks is the involvement of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is one example. Of course, she is the lead advocate of the Green New Deal. She has been involved in shaping Biden's climate policy now. And I think that's something that imagery and knowing what she stands for and having her now heavily involved in shaping Biden's climate policy helps to underscore why they would even feel this way in the first place.
Yeah, for sure. I think as one of the union guys made the point at the end, I thought it was just kind of really fitting and descriptive of how our politics work. But most people aren't tuned into the day in, day out. They're not going to read Joe Biden's detailed climate plan that he put out last week, but they are going to see images of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders. These are very liberal members who were on a shared policy task force with Biden when Biden tried to, show that he is he's reaching out to all types of constituencies within the party. And they're kind of hanging on to that, as that headline. Oh, he's worked with AOC and Bernie to say that he's going too liberal on climate. And also looking at, I mentioned a debate mistake that Biden made where he kind of suggested he might ban fracking in the spur of the moment. His campaign has tried to back away from that. He's subsequent interviews, Biden has said, no, I don't want to ban fracking. But people, hang on to those, need to understand, kind of quick sound bites, photos, imagery. So, Biden's going to have to those perceptions that exist.
Well, one thing I think that frustrates a lot of oil and gas workers who make up these unions in the industry is that they know that natural gas has been driving the reductions in carbon dioxide emissions in the United States of America in recent years. And they look at it and say, this is actually your transitionary fuel source, your transitionary energy source. If you want to be moving away from the traditional fossil fuel model, you can't just do that in a matter of, a couple of years. You really need to be amping up this natural gas production, this natural gas revolution that we've seen that has really led a reduction in carbon dioxide emissions, which I think helps to get to some of the frustrations.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, these unions officials argue that, look, I mean, natural gas, especially in a state like Pennsylvania, I mean, it has been the biggest contributor to emissions reductions over the last decade. I mean, renewables have played a part as well, but natural gas has been majority reason. And it's also a very, I mean, if you look at our, plastics that we use, plastics, we're increasing our use of plastics during this pandemic. It's helped with PPE, of course, for healthcare workers. It's a big component there. So, and actually byproducts of natural gas are, a key component of plastics. So, and there's a big plastics manufacturing facility that's being built in the area that's going to be counted on for a number of, a lot of jobs. I mean, again, Biden has not said, I don't think anyone expects him to block a plant like this or to totally say we can't have any natural gas. But again, if the perception is he's moving in a direction that's more antagonistic towards fossil fuels, then of course we've seen with the current president and that he's someone who's going to really try to put the foot of the government on, to really push for renewables as a competitor to gas. I mean, they're going to see that as a threat, of course.
Just final quick question, Josh Siegel, before we let you go. How significant could this be in terms of Trump versus Biden, especially if these concerns among many rank and file union workers in these particular industries expand?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, the pandemic, of course, throws everything out the window a little bit. I mean, Biden does look very good in the polls right now in Pennsylvania. Of course, it's early. But I mean, I spoke with Ryan Costello. He's a former House member from a suburban district outside Philly, a Republican. And he said that these building unions voters are the new swing voter in Pennsylvania over suburban women who look like they might be Biden. I think it's going to be very important. Again, assuming maybe in 4 months, people have the pandemic less on their mind and it's less a referendum in that way. If this was a traditional election, I mean, I think for sure this is, the building trades have a lot of influence. That conflict that exists between, what Democrats want on climate and their traditional ties to unions.
Sure. Josh Siegel, energy and environment reporter at The Washington Examiner. Thanks so much for joining us on this Washington Examiner Wednesday. Excellent reporting.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for taking an interest in the story.
Absolutely. Thank you. Once again, Josh Siegel joining us from The Washington Examiner. Check out his report, Biden's liberal climate policies feared by unions in Pennsylvania, at WashingtonExaminer.com. It really is just a great expose of these concerns. It's a lengthy story compared to a lot of you get a lot of different Examiner stories that can be a bit shorter. This one is longer because it includes a lot of different interviews, components. He really gets a good lay of the land. And I definitely think Joe Biden needs to be concerned about this constituency of oil and gas workers and not go so far. He already has, in my view. He has jumped the shark. He's too far on this issue of energy and environment, too far to the left. The question is, what perception in the next few months leading up to the election time, what perception will voters have in those sectors, work in oil and gas and related industries? What perception will they have in the coming months of Joe Biden on that issue versus Donald Trump, who's been very strong on energy issues? All right, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. One more hour up ahead. News Talk 710 KNUS.